This is Smith Sabatino. I'm Roland Smith. Carl's on assignment, and with me in the studio today, filling in for Carl, certainly, Alan Marcus, where we've been talking for the last several segments, Judge Herb Stern, an extraordinary DA, author of several books, but the one I'd really recommend to you is The Diary of a DA. If you haven't ever read it or haven't got it, you should, because it's a fascinating book. And Sean Tully, editor-at-large at Fortune magazine, the author of so many of the front-page stories. Now, you have been listening to Judge Stern and Alan and I pontificate for the last so many segments. Now, what did you hear that you disagree with or you want to add to?
Well, given Alan's intro, to quote the great critic Samuel Johnson, I can barely wait to hear myself talk.
That's good. I remember that.
Well, obviously, I had the pleasure of reviewing Herb's book, Diary of a DA, and I recommend it highly. It is the most fascinating look at the corruption in New Jersey politics, how he handled it, what he was up against, because there was no tradition of that kind of law enforcement, ardent law enforcement in New Jersey. And he did it against tremendous odds. The sketches of the characters are enough to make a professional journalist jealous because it's so good.
Yeah.
And the writing is terrific. And so I had the pleasure of reviewing it in Fortune. And obviously was blown away by it. It's just a terrific job. And as a primer in law enforcement, it's a great way to learn both about the law and also the colorful characters and the narrative drive of the book makes it a terrific read.
Well, you know, speaking of good writing, you are one of the best in the business today. Did you always want to be a journalist?
No, actually, I did major in English when I was in college, and then in the interest of getting a good job, I went to business school, and I never imagined that the combination would work out for me. And I actually worked for what was then called First National Citibank. It's now Citigroup for about a year and a half or so, and I got some good grounding in business beyond what I had learned in business school, obviously. But then I gradually got into freelance writing, and Alan helped me, in fact. And I wrote for a magazine called New Jersey Monthly, which is still there. And I worked my way up, and finally I put together my business training with journalism. And business writing, Roland, at that time was not a big field. It was not the growth field it is now. It was kind of a backwater, even at places like the New York Times. Economic news didn't nearly have the weight that it has now. But fortunately, Fortune hired me. I started off as a reporter taking notes and following relatively famous writers around and interviewing people. But then I quickly moved up because I did have a lot of experience as a writer. And it has been a tremendous growth field ever since then, obviously, the importance of economic news, the importance of the colorful characters we see on the business scene, the scandals, all of that has been tremendous to cover over the years. And if you have some technical expertise, you can put a different spin on it and do more analysis and not just kind of repeat what you've read everywhere else. You can really, I think, take strong points of view, which I've always tried to do.
Now, you spent a couple of years with CNBC, as I recall.
Yes.
I used to watch you on these shows.
Yeah, absolutely. In the kind of the middle of my career in 1996, I went to CNBC and I was an on-air reporter for a year and a half. And that was a really aerobic experience.
Define aerobic, will you please?
You're just racing all the time, the deadlines and the daily. I'd never done daily before, but I found that when Fortune rehired me after a year and a half, that it was great training because I was never intimidated by a short deadline ever again, and that's helped a lot in the internet era to write very, very fast. Which was a skill that I didn't have before I went to CNBC.
Well, the skill that you have is long form journalism.
Yes,
it's taking an issue and exploring it from the beginning and a middle and an end, but not in a minute 45 seconds.
Oh, that's true. But now we also are doing stories on the web, And so that helped there. But you know, some of the longer stories, you don't have a lot of time for to do either. But I would have at least 2 or 3 weeks normally.
Do you know, many years ago, Hemingway was asked to write a story, said he could write a story in 3 sentences. Have you ever heard this story?
No.
And he was challenged by some other writers. And he said, yes, I could write a story in 3 sentences, in 6 words, in fact. And they said, it's impossible. Well, they had a little bet going, and Hemingway came up with For Sale, Baby Shoes, Never Used.
Uh-huh.
Beginning, a middle,
middle and an end. That's right.
How about that? Isn't that something?
Yeah. Yeah, it shows how concise he could be how quick he could think.
Now, you also have a relationship, obviously, with Alan Marcus. You guys went to prep school together.
Yes.
And you want to tell me some stories that we can put on radio?
Yeah, well, we went to a prep school that is now very prestigious, but at the time it was not a Lawrenceville by any means. It was a school that typically the average age was probably like 18 instead of 14. And a lot of the kids had come from fancy prep schools where they hadn't done too well, and it ended up at the school, the Hun School. But we had a family of Arab princes there who were the sons and grandchildren of King Faisal, who were taking lessons in Arabic and politics at Princeton through a famous professor there. That's why they happened to be in Princeton. So they were going to the Hun School. In fact, Prince Saud, who's the foreign minister, went there, and about 5 of his brothers and 2 total characters we went to school with named Saud and Abdullah, who were... One of them went on a hunger strike in Princeton Hospital, and Alan Marcus used to smuggle him cheeseburgers.
it was an act of diplomacy.
and the dean was in the bed next door. Remember, Alan? But it was a wonderful school where we go to school. You couldn't get in trouble, Roland. You go to school 6 days a week, including Saturday. And if you weren't on a team, they'd put you on a bus to go cheer for the team on Wednesdays and Saturdays, right? So you had no ability to get in trouble. It was like a boot camp.
Some of us found a way.
You wore coats and ties. Alan ran the newspaper. He was so exhausted, he would like be sleeping in the morning in the back of geometry class, that we would throw chalk at him to wake him up. Yeah, he'd wake up saying, off in an interior. And it was the right answer once, too.
Sean actually told that story at dinner at the headmaster's house, much to my chagrin.
And Alan is coming down from the bathroom where he had helped himself to a cigarette and was misbehaving as usual.
Sean Tully was, I guess he graduated first or second in our class. He's one of the brightest guys I ever met. He was the second best writer at the Hun School after me, of course. It's amazing. My grandchildren love Uncle Sean. We have been friends for 54 years. We have never had a crossword until tonight after the show ends. But he has always amazed me at his ability to understand and know issues, economic issues. His grasp is true, and I'm not kidding around when I say this. He has predicted, as I said earlier, 2 or 3 of the last economic busts in America and internationally. He was the first journalist to wave that red flag. And there were some who said he was crazy. And as I jokingly say, when are you going to say something that's good? But, Sean, why don't you, using that, tell us a little bit about oil today and what we can anticipate?
Yes, that's something that I've been watching very, very carefully. Obviously, when the price of oil was in the low 100s, it was predictable that you were going to get a lot of excess drilling because the highest cost producers were making $40 or $50 a barrel. This happens a lot in the oil markets. You have these temporary shortages where the price soars way above the production cost, and that brings in a lot of producers who otherwise wouldn't be drilling for oil. But eventually, the downside of that, at least for prices, is that new supply comes pouring on and drives the prices back down. And we've seen a lot of that recently. Now, the question is, with prices now in the 40s, they're probably below the production cost of the producer clearing the market, selling the last barrel. So the issue is, where are they going to settle out now? And probably... with a lot of the shale oil going offline now, because those wells only last about a year and a half, unlike most wells, which can last 30 or 40 years. So that production is going down fast. So that's what, when Alan was talking about, and Herb were talking about what the strategy of the Saudis is it's to bring the prices down below the production costs of shale oil and drive that off the market. And that can be accomplished very rapidly because the wells don't last a long time.
Well, they need to last at least in our lifetime, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, hold your thought on that. I want to continue with that, and we will do so as Ms. Sabatino continues on the Envision Radio Network. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
America Weekend. Big Success in a Minute with George and Mary Lynn.
What's the easiest way to make tough decisions? Flip a coin.
It sounds silly, but it works. Here are the three steps.
Step one, frame two options into a heads or tails choice to cut through the mental clutter.
Step two, flip a coin.
Step three, see how you feel about the result.
Are you glad or are you disappointed? It's your intuition talking to you.
It seems simple, but it's really quite complex. This trick pushes you to a decision.
Once you have the information you need, delaying a decision rarely helps. Gut reactions often produce the best results.
Is flipping a coin a great decision-making tool?
Heads means yes, tails means no. Heads it is.
So flip a coin for your big success.
Find big success at BIGGSuccess.com.
Do you have troubled skin or acne? With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Call Proactive Plus now and receive a 60-day risk-free trial along with two free extras and free shipping. Call 800-393-6139. That's 1-800-393-6139.
Welcome to American Biker Minute. Hey, looking to bag a great tattoo? Top five mistakes bikers make when ordering a tattoo. Today on American Biker Minute.
Do you have troubled skin or acne? With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Call Proactive Plus now and receive a 60-day risk-free trial along with two free extras and free shipping. Call 800-393-6139. That's 1-800-393-6139.
Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute from Willie's Tropical Tattoo in Daytona. The top five things to remember before getting your first tat. One, in order to keep the colors from washing out, avoid the sun before and after the tattoo. Two, when selecting your design and ink, be sober. Three, look over the artist's portfolio before you decide. Four, never allow someone to dare you to get a tattoo. Refer back to number three and being sober. And lastly, it's hard to erase a tattoo. Be absolutely sure you really want a tattoo. Have fun. American Biker Minute, your passport to the open road on two wheels.